fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel, and for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. In Friday's show, we'll light the torch for the final weekend of the Pyeongchang Winter Olympic Games with a recap of the action so far in South Korea. It's hard to believe that just 2 weeks ago, we were watching the athletes march in the opening ceremony, with questions ahead like, who will win the women's hockey gold medal? What impact will the IOC doping sanctions against Russia have on the games? And how will the Nigerian women's bobsledders do as the first representatives from Africa in their winter sport? Now we know, and we'll answer those questions coming up in a conversation with Washington Post Olympics writer Teak Root. But first, let's check in with VOA's Jim Stevenson, who catches us up on figure skating, the news that a Russian curling athlete failed a drug test, and news of a South Korean medal winner in a sliding sport in front of his home country fans, and answers to the question of what do Olympic athletes eat at the games. Here's Jim Stevenson with his podcast, The Game Room.
Japan's Yuzuru Hanyu has become the first men's figure skater to win in back-to-back Winter Olympics in more than six decades. His teammate, Shoma Uno, skated to silver, while Spain's Javier Fernandez won the bronze. 17-year-old American Vincent Zhou was amazed by Hanyu's winning performance.
No man has been repeat Olympic champion since 66 years ago. So for him to repeat that feat is incredible. And to make it even more incredible, he was injured for 3 months, and he got on the ice 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks of training before the Olympics, the biggest stage in the world. That's absolutely incredible.
After a horrible short program left him mired in 17th place, 18-year-old American Nathan Chen suddenly leaped into contention with a long program that would end up being the day's best. He became the first skater in Olympic history to land five clean quadruple jumps and a sixth with a hand down in a long program. The last American to win gold in the event was Evan Lysacek, who had zero quads in his program. Chen would place fifth just ahead of Cho, who made his own mark as the first skater to land a quadruple Lutz at the Olympics.
To place sixth among the best skaters in the history of figure skating was absolutely incredible. It was better than anyone expected for me. It was better than I expected for myself.
The Chinese-American has his sights on the next Winter Olympics in Beijing.
I will have lots of attention heading in because I'm really popular in China. My parents are from Beijing. My grandparents still live there. So it's going to be like a second hometown. And Alibaba is helping support that dream, support that goal.
An unprecedented doping scandal led to the banning of Russia from sending a formal team to the Winter Olympics. Now, Russia has confirmed Alexander Krushelnitsky has tested positive for a banned substance after he and his wife won a bronze medal in the inaugural mixed doubles curling event. IOC spokesman Mark Adams says the incident could impact Russian athletes who have been allowed to compete under the Olympic flag.
Should this case come to fruition, that will also be part of the consideration as to whether there will be an allowance for them to march in the closing ceremony under the flag. Obviously, as individual Russian athletes, they can take part in the closing ceremony, but that the further issue of the flag and so on will be discussed by the executive board.
Former Russian professional ice hockey player Alexei Yashin hopes the rest of his nation's athletes will continue to compete without distraction.
The only thing I know is that this probe seems to have been confirmed. I don't know what will happen next. I'd like to ask the guys to not pay attention to this. Do their work. Focus on future starts and games and achieve the best possible results. Good luck to all. We love our athletes and expect victory.
The idea of a curler using performance-enhancing drugs may seem bizarre, but the sport does demand a high level of athleticism at the Olympic level. host South Korea burst into celebration when Yoo Sung-bin slid to gold in men's skeleton, making him an instant national hero. He says, "Winning a medal means a lot to me. I strongly feel that we have finally done something big. Rather than think we've just won a medal in an unpopular sport, I just want to enjoy the moment." He and his coaches were not sure that South Koreans would be paying attention to their efforts. "We initially thought that public awareness of this sport would be low, but I'm happy to see that more people have come to learn about it." The 23-year-old was the gold medal favorite, but his four-run time of 3 minutes 20.55 seconds was a staggering 1.63 seconds ahead of silver medalist Nikita Trigubov of Russia, and is the largest margin of victory in Olympic skeleton history. It is also the largest margin in any Olympic sliding event since 1972. Food is a big deal for Olympic athletes. It gives them energy, health, and warmth for a physiological and psychological edge. Susie Parker-Simmons is a sport dietitian for the U.S. Olympic Committee.
"What I recommend for athletes right now in competition mode is to be as safe as possible. This might happen once in a lifetime. You don't want to blow it with just having an upset stomach because you've eaten something that's different to what your body's used to."
Korean food is some of the world's finest. Savory, salty soups with fish so tender it falls off the bone. Thick slabs of grilled pork and beef backed with spicy kimchi that many Korean grandmothers swear cures the common cold. But it's very different from what many foreign Olympians are used to. Parker Simmons says there's a time for athletes to enjoy it.
"I say as soon as the games is over, go at it. Enjoy, be adventurous. We've had some teams now finished, and someone had octopus and chicken legs last night, but they're finished, and I'm all for it."
An average-sized woman competing at the Olympics will need 4,000 calories or more per day to train and compete. A typical man needs about 7,000 calories. U.S. men's figure skater Vincent Zhou had no problem with his diet.
"Here, it hasn't been very difficult finding comfort food because, number one, the cafeteria in the athlete village has lots of different options."
His teammate, Adam Rippon, is happy with both sides of his Olympic culinary experience.
"They are taking care of us, and we are able to have proper nutrition. There's so many people here behind the scenes making sure that all the athletes are well-fed and prepared for all of their events. So, you know, we're super lucky. As far as Korean cuisine goes, if you guys haven't been to Korean barbecue, I totally recommend it."
The U.S. team has its own chefs and dietitians. Overall, at the Olympics, nearly 500 chefs and cooking assistants provide a combined 18,000 meals per day for the nearly 3,000 athletes from 90 different countries.
Thanks, Jim. If you remember, in Olympic food news, the games began with a viral story about the Norwegian Olympic delegation mistakenly ordering 15,000 eggs from a South Korean food supplier, not the 1,500 eggs they originally wanted. It hasn't hurt Norway's performance, however, as they lead the medal count with 37 overall and 13 gold through Friday. That's VOA's Jim Stevenson with the Game Room podcast, available at voanews.com. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Next up on the show, we'll continue our Olympics coverage with Teak Root, who is writing the Daily Olympics newsletter for the Washington Post. You can see his work at WashingtonPost.com. I started off my conversation with Teak by asking him to put the USA women's ice hockey team's victory on Thursday in the gold medal game over Canada in perspective. After all, the USA team had not won the gold medal since 1998, even though they have won a number of world championships against the Canadians.
Every time the Olympics come up, this is a big question. Can the U.S. break Canada's stranglehold on the women's hockey gold? This always comes down to the bounce of a puck, and it did again, today as well. But it's just always been so close and tantalizing, and I think it's just been huge to have that sort of weight off the U.S. shoulders. I mean, I think in some senses the Canadians were definitely feeling more pressure than the U.S. even to win, to defend the streak they had. They had a 24-game winning streak going into the into last night. And so, you know, I think that underdog role has always suited the U.S. well, and they rose to the occasion this time. And then come Beijing, let's see where they're at mentally, but I'm sure it'll be, again, a close game. But for now, I think people are just sort of savoring this pretty big win.
That's Teak Root of the Washington Post. For some background about the U.S. women's team, just last year they threatened to boycott the Hockey World Championships due to a salary dispute with USA Hockey. They ultimately reached a resolution and went on to win the tournament. I asked Teak if he thinks the USA women proved the value of their stance by winning the gold medal.
Yeah, I think they, as you said, they threatened to boycott, and they held out, and I think they got a lot of what they wanted, or at least some of it, but not everything. And so I think this was a chance for them to showcase what they're worth. And I think they had an even bigger stage this time around because the NHL decided to sit out on the men's side. So basically it was the women's show for most of these Olympics, and they couldn't have put on a better performance. And I think they'll have an argument now that by creating one of the best Olympic moments, they deserve to be paid as such. And we'll see how the USOC and USA Hockey react. But I think right now I haven't heard too much in the way of comments on what it means for that or what they're planning. I think they're just sort of enjoying it. But I wouldn't be surprised if this issue comes up again. It's you know, they didn't get to, as far as I understand, they didn't get to, you know, pay equality. They made strides, but I think there's a long way that they want to go.
We're talking with Teak Root of the Washington Post here on the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sunny Young. With some breaking news today, we have the pairing for the men's hockey gold medal game. The Olympic athletes from Russia will play Germany for the ice hockey championship on Sunday. The Germans upset the Canadians in the semifinals, holding on for a 4-3 victory after taking an early 4-1 lead. I asked Teak if he thought the interest in the men's competition was subdued in this Olympics due to the National Hockey League in North America declining to make their athletes available for the Olympics. NHL players first competed in the Olympic Games in 1998.
Well, I haven't seen official numbers yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if viewership is down across the board. I know the Canadians were lambasting their team in the media beforehand, and the U.S. seemed to show very little interest in the American team. And when they did, it was fairly negative. So I think interest is definitely down across the board. And then competition-wise, it gave the Russians a pretty clear advantage, and we're seeing that play out because the KHL is considerably stronger than all the other second-tier leagues in the world. And I think with NHL players, you would have seen the U.S. likely make it further. Canada just barely squeaked by in the quarterfinals, and I don't know if that would have happened otherwise. And so I think it's definitely thrown a lot of uncertainty into the field. And honestly, I don't think people were that excited about watching men's hockey at the Olympics, which is sort of a sad thing to say. And, you know, I don't know if it'll sway the NHL. They might be totally okay with that. So we'll see what happens in the long term. But for the short term, I think it just put a bit of a damper on the whole men's tournament.
Team USA seems to be making a late push in the medal table with 21, certainly helped by the USA men's curling team defeating Canada in a recent semifinal and guaranteeing itself a chance at a first-ever gold medal. As we said before, Norway is far and away the medal leader, with Canada, Germany, and the U.S. in the next three spots. I asked Teak if he is surprised with the medal standings as we head into the final weekend. He said, sometimes, even the best planning, can be derailed by bad weather and bad luck.
Norway doesn't surprise me that they're at the top. They're almost always at the top of the winter games. So they're doing particularly well this year, but their general dominance isn't a huge surprise. But it's been interesting. I think less of a fault of, say, the U.S. or Russia. I think some of these smaller countries are starting to come on board. And you saw New Zealand triple their total ever Winter Games medal count yesterday. They only had one medal coming into Pyeongchang, and they just won two more last night. So I think you're seeing a bit more diversity in the medal chart, which is a good thing, and it may come at a cost to the U.S. And Russia. And I think there's also luck is involved in some of it. And with the Russians, the curler that won the mixed doubles bronze medal was officially accused and of doping and had their medal taken away. So that's definitely a factor as well. But yeah, I'm a little bit surprised that the U.S. and Russia are somewhat muted in the medal count, but part of it's luck. Mikaela Shiffrin was supposed to win gold for the U.S. and just had an off day. Lindsey Vonn skied out in the combine yesterday with a pretty solid lead. So I think there's some factors that are just out of our control, like the alpine skiing weather. But, you're also seeing some cool and fun results with countries like New Zealand.
Now that the games have just a couple days to go, I asked the Washington Post's Teak Root what his favorite moments will be from the games. My favorite was Ester Ledecka of the Czech Republic winning a gold medal in skiing, even though her primary sport is snowboarding.
Yeah, Ester Ledecka was pretty cool to see. Her face when she came down, she had no idea that she even won. And she's been quite the story, and she actually she'll be back at it, I think, tomorrow night and could win the snowboarding gold. So it's pretty wild, the first athlete in over a century to win medals in unrelated sports at the Olympics. So that's pretty cool. I think Red Gerard, who won the first U.S. gold, was a really, really fun to watch. This kid looks like he's maybe 12, honestly, and just came down and had a heck of a run. So that was really fun to watch. I think some of the camaraderie at the Olympics, you saw one of the cross-country ski races, the quote-unquote exotic company, the countries that bring up the rear, all sort of waited for each other and cheered each other on, which was awesome. Another big highlight for me has been the U.S. women's cross-country team. The whole games, they were knocking on the podium, and they were already having the best games they've ever had. And then they broke through with that gold in the relay with Keegan Randall and Jesse Diggins, and that was so cool to see. You couldn't find a happier, smiley bunch of people. And then I think the bobsled has oddly become a place where there's a few other countries that compete, starting with Jamaica and Cool Runnings, obviously, but it's really expanded from there. Nigeria was the first ever African country to field a bobsled team this year, and they just got so much attention. Visa picked them up as sponsors, and they really were sort of ambassadors of the Olympic spirit, and I think they lived up to that. They finished dead last by a long shot, but they really seemed to enjoy the moment and couldn't have been happier, and that's really fun to see. So there's a few other ones sprinkled in there. I think the U.S. Curling win this morning was pretty remarkable to watch. They upset Canada twice in the games and will be playing for gold. It's the best already secured as the best ever curling medal for the U.S. So that was really fun to watch.
That's Teak Root of the Washington Post recapping the last 2 weeks of the Winter Olympics in South Korea. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Speaking of the Nigerian women's three-person bobsled team, we turn to Voice of America's Gwen Uten for some reaction to the African women making an appearance on the icy bobsled track in South Korea. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Hey there, Dan. As you mentioned, the three women who make up Nigerian's bobsled team captured a lot of attention and a lot of hearts in these Olympic Games. And despite finishing in last place in overall standings, they have a lot to be proud of. Before leaving South Korea, team captain and driver Seun Adigun talked about the team's legacy and said the reason for their appearance in this year's Olympic Games is bigger than winning a medal.
I think this was always a mission that was bigger than ourselves. You know, this was a selfless act of trying to encourage others to tackle that fear of the unknown. And so our athleticism we had to put aside a long time ago, which, you know, I was mentioning about even when you quantify what it means to be an athlete, that means for a true competitor, a podium spot. But we had to accept the fact that winning doesn't have to be quantified by that. You know, it could be quantified by our ability to trailblaze and our ability to be innovative and to help encourage others towards that same excellence.
Seun said she is very confident that the team's legacy will inspire future generations to literally follow in their tracks.
I think that what we've done has set the groundwork for how people will now get into the sport, and it has started a wave, literally, since before we even got to this point, the inquiries that were coming in, the interest of people from not only homegrown within Nigeria, but within the diaspora that are now encouraged to do something all over the world, from Africa, from everywhere. So we're really, really excited about the outlook that this here has set for everyone else.
And Seun hopes the team's Olympic appearance will also inspire women across the globe.
Oh, I think it's been the most important, the fact that we're women. I mean, we've always been advocates of being a proper and positive representation of everything that we are, everything that we're composed of. And the first thing that you see when you see us are women, you know, strong African-American women. And I think that the biggest part of this is being able to provide visual representation for other women, no matter what color they are, that they can see that there is power in who you are as a woman, and there is resilience in what you are set out to achieve as a woman in general, and that you should never be crippled by what people expect of you as a woman, or you should never be handicapped by that fear of the unknown. You should never have to sit back and wait for things to happen. You can take initiative, and it can be extremely powerful when you do it.
That was Nigeria's team bobsled leader, Seun Adigun. Our thanks to the Bobsled and Skeleton Federation of Nigeria for providing that audio. Twitter reaction to the team's history-making Olympic run has been constant since the games began. One follower wrote, "It's so cool that there's a Nigerian women's bobsled team at the Winter Olympics. The first Olympic bobsled team from Africa and Nigeria's Winter Olympics debut. I love stories like that." And this tweet, "Mad love for the women's bobsled team from Nigeria. You are all winners in my book." And finally, a tweeter had this amazing fact. Jamaica has a women's bobsled team now. Between Jamaica, Nigeria, and the U.S., there are three bobsled teams of black women. I'll be watching bobsled. Well, if that wasn't enough, this year we saw the highest number of African countries participating in the Winter Olympics in history. Incredible. No African nation has won a winter medal yet, but look out. These athletes have no doubt inspired a generation, so history could be made again in 2022, and we'll be watching. I'll hand it back over to you, Dan. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen, and we hope you all have a great weekend. That's VOA's Gwen Uten. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. And that wraps up the February 23rd edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Workinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
February 6th marked the International Day of Zero Tolerance to Female Genital Mutilation or Cutting. The United States stands in solidarity with governments and communities around the world working to end this human rights abuse, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a statement released on February 6th. According to UNICEF, at least 200 million girls and women alive today have undergone some form of female genital mutilation or cutting. If current trends continue, an additional 15 million girls are at risk of being subjected to the practice by 2030. Although it is illegal in most countries, these laws are not always enforced. Female genital mutilation is often performed in communities where the value and status of women and girls lags behind that of men and boys. The United States partners with a broad range of stakeholders, from policymakers and health practitioners to religious leaders and youth activists, to work against female genital mutilation or cutting and raise awareness of the harm it causes to societies, Ms. Nauert said. U.S. Department of State officials continue to engage diplomatically with host governments and through bilateral and multilateral partners to end this practice. In 2017, the department contributed $5 million to UN efforts combating female genital mutilation, and its annual country reports on human rights practices include country-by-country information on the prevalence of the practice and international efforts taken to combat it. Building on investments made in previous years to address the problem, we continue to advance initiatives to support survivor-centered programs in countries where female genital mutilation is most prevalent, Ms. Nauer noted. The department's programs promote the abandonment of female genital mutilation and work with communities and civil society organizations to increase their capacity to implement laws and legislation prohibiting it. This fiscal year, USAID is launching a 3-year pilot activity in Kenya aimed at combating the practice of female genital mutilation and child marriage by tackling the root causes and social motivators that drive these practices, including women's lack of agency, unresponsive health services, and inactive protection networks, and limited economic opportunities for women and girls. The advancement of women and girls is essential to peace, prosperity, and security, said Ms. Nauert. The U.S., she said, remains committed in our efforts to combat all forms of gender-based violence, including female genital mutilation or cutting. And we renew the call for zero tolerance to end this harmful procedure that affects women and girls in far too many places across the globe.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.